Alright, time for another draftphysics.com, debatephysics.com also, but still seeking actual debate. I mean, you can't even get anything close to any kind of counter-argument. I mean, I wish I could provide you the counter-argument, but the counter-argument is just in the form of, he doesn't know what he's talking about. Not specific enough. It doesn't have enough physics in it. You know, it's not useful counter arguing. So, it's just stuck being this, I can't help you understand if you don't provide me any information regarding what you don't understand. I think it's clear. I don't think anybody reasonable, frankly. Okay, you're not reasonable in my opinion. If you can't concede that maybe physics jumped the evidence in a lot of these cases. I mean, to say that space is being created and expanding the universe because objects are redshifted with distance seems like you might be jumping, okay, to a conclusion that somehow there has to be more space and that there couldn't be any other explanation for why the frequency of the light is lengthened with distance. You know, and you can do this with each case. And so I'm going to talk about the atom and the Bohr model or whatever. The one they said, oh, wow, that's what it's got to be. You know, the solar system thing. Which, you know, they had lots of choices. You know, solar system isn't the only choice of how things get into arrangements. And they had the rules of the, what you're going to make it out of are charges and, you know, electrons and protons. That's what atoms are made out of. And especially back then, that's what atoms were made out of. There wasn't the 400 extra particles to worry about. It just seems a bizarre way of understanding how atoms combine and associate when you have these other choices. I mean, I can't even call their model electrical or magnetic. It's neither one. It's not a charge model, really, in any reasonable sense. And it's certainly not magnetic. And I think, obviously, I think obvious to anyone who has interacted with physical objects at all, magnets especially, would understand that, you know, magnets do some things that really do account for how you could understand how molecules are sharing electrons. So, you know, leave us begin. But it's like every case. I mean, you can go through every single, almost every kind of weird statement made by physics. Every one of them is under evidence. Every bold claim, you know, wave particle duality, all this stuff, if you really look at the evidence, they don't have any. I mean, they don't have nearly enough to say, well, we've drawn a conclusion, we figured it out. It's so far from that. The other thing I've been doing, I've been listening to audiobooks here and there, reading what I can. And it's funny how they bring up all these historical figures, you know, even ones that are hundreds of years ago, who warned against paying too much attention to what your ancestors say, you know, don't pay too much attention to what everyone says. And physics is just all about being a cabal, a one-minded, closed-minded cabal of, they're going to tell us how it all happened. And it's all going to be their narrative, and they're not even going to point out that, well, it is possible that this other explanation could be the truth. They won't even go near it. Such, so bad. The logic is so bad. And these are, like, again, this is supposed to be smart people. Well, in my opinion, they've wasted their intelligence. But anyway, squandered it, let's say. Gotten a lot less than they should have out of it. Alright, so the model that physics has accepted is, okay, first off, they have electrons, and we'll draw protons with an X in them, all right, just for fun. So we have electrons and protons, and they know they're inversely related. That is, the field that moves the electron, pushes it, will pull the proton, so to speak. And then they have the third thing called the neutron, which they've made into a solid thing, like it's a particle, when it seems kind of obvious that what it is an electron and a proton. You know, that's what a neutron is. So it's those two things that have attracted each other and are very close together. And that what is in atoms, you know, what's in these nucleuses is something they call a deuteron, okay, which is an electron and two protons, right? Okay. Now, obviously, you could do it the opposite way because they attract. You could just put a proton and two electrons, you know, and then you're starting to get into atomic structure because the atomic structure ends up being the nucleus has twice as many protons in it, generally speaking, okay, than it has electrons. If you're going to just think of neutrons as being electrons and protons, and it makes it so much easier to understand how this thing happens. How the nucleus ends up being this little tiny thing in the center where there's supposed to be this strong force that keeps the protons together. See, because the rule is, I guess I draw it over here, is that, you know, two protons would absolutely hate each other, just, you know, the same amount as electrons would hate each other. But the idea is the closer you bring them together, the stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger the force gets. Just like the pulling force of two gravitational bodies, like two suns getting really close, to be incredible strength of gravity pulling them together. The same thing happens in reverse, in the sense they really repel each other. And I've used the analogy that I think is perfectly sensible. That's like two ping pong paddles, and you have a ball bouncing between them. And as you bring the paddles closer and closer together, the impacts would double and triple and quadruple, and that would represent pressure, something hitting, pushing. With each impact, there would be an impulse of direction away from each other. So the closer they're pushed together. So they call this the strong force that must be pushing them together, when all you have to do is stick an electron in here and the problem's solved. You don't need a strong force. So it's so simple. I mean, this deuteron thing is so obvious and simple that this is your strong force. I mean, all you need to do is put an electron between two protons and you've gotten rid of the repulsion between the protons because they can't see each other. And all they see is the electron they're attracted to. So obviously this is a way of pushing electrons and protons very close to each other is just simply put an electron between them. And it seems obvious that that's exactly what's taken place inside of atoms, is that the extra electron, the protons, okay, that you have more of, because you have the extra protons plus the neutrons. So you have, you know, one half is electrons of the neutrons, then you have those protons to even that out and balance the charge, and then you have the extra protons. So it's a positive object because it has an excess number of protons. It's doing this thing. There's more deuterons, okay, inside the atom. Should have drawn, see, I can't draw it in the dimensions that, you know, would make it more coherent or obvious. But, you know, the thing can be shaped, you know, you have a proton, an electron, and then a proton, and then you could have two protons over here. And now they're balanced, their pressure, or their hatred for each other. And then you could have another set of protons out here and out here. So you could have six protons for one electron. Now that's not what the ratio is. So if the arrangement's obviously something more, you know, like there's an electron, a proton, and then this can just be extended also. You could think another electron here, and then another proton, you know, because you're really trying to protect the mechanism from the protons being too close to each other. And then through that arrangement, you know, could have another electron here and then a proton out here. so you can start, you know, making the geometry that'll get you the ratio you want, which is, you know, more protons than electrons. Put simply. All right, so the nucleus is positive. Now, the argument would be is why are the protons on the inside and the electrons on the outside? Well, that has to do with their what they call their mass. Now, they really can't weigh any of these things, so assessing their mass, you're really saying what's the pulling power. So in a way, you're stuck always testing their charge, because there's no way to test their mass, because they're always going to be in a field. I mean, you really can't make a neutral field for any of these things in any real sense. You always have to push pressure against pressure and compensate for the pressure they're in. And so, it's never some kind of quiet place. It's a pretty noisy place. You have to put them to try to move them around. And they're going to be in association with other pieces that you're pulling it apart from. So you're going to create some sort of number that is unique to the circumstance in which you're testing it, not necessarily a real assessment of the actual value. But the point is that the protons appear to be harder to move. So that could be the simple explanation, is that they're just more massive and therefore harder to move. They're heavier. So they end up in the middle because they don't move as freely as electrons. So electrons are something like 2,000 times, all right, less massive, which mass would be measured by how hard it is to move the thing, frankly. How heavy it appears, not necessarily how heavy it actually is. Well, that's not very good camera work, frankly. My bad. All right, so you have this, so you can understand how the nucleus gets very small because you're just balancing the exposure of the electron and proton. And the fact is, you know, you can have electron and electron right next to each other, and therefore you have a lot of pressure moving them apart, and they're not likely to be very close. And the more I stick a proton in there, the more, you know, if I can get exposure to a proton, then they're both going to be pulled in closer, and this, you know, they're going to create more pressure between them this way. So they will get closer and closer and all that crap. So I've pointed out, okay, you have a positive here, and you could just call that, you know, you can consider a charge is something like magnetism, you know, north and south poles, and so you can just figure, well, you know, what you're really just going to do is create magnetic attraction. So you're going to have a south pole here in the middle, and then you're going to say, well, we know we have these protons, extra protons in the nucleus. That means we have extra electrons outside, right? But we're going to just argue that, just for the sake of argument, there's the same amount of electrons as there are protons in the universe. And it just works out that way that, yeah, that works. So, you know, and the fact is now the electrons can be attracted to this big proton. So you can just think of this now as a big proton, because it has the same big charge. It's positive. It's a net positive. And the net part is important because you sort of have to understand that it's going to be arranged. That is, it's going to have places where you could look at it where it's going to look like an electron. And then other places you look at it where it's going to look like a proton. So it's a dipole, like the neutron. So the neutron is basically, I'm saying, an electron and a proton. And it would just be about how you look at it. If you look at it sideways, it's neutral, because you see just as much electron as you do proton, especially from a distance. So the further away you are from it, the more neutral it would look. You wouldn't notice the dipolarness from a distance. They would just be saying it's a neutral charge. So the closer, you have to get close to be able to see that it has a black end and a white end. The further away I put this, you wouldn't notice. It'd be better if I said a green light and a red light, because then the further away I get, the more you wouldn't be able to tell the difference, and it would just end up being a brown light. Anyway, all right, so, you know, this isn't a particle. It's a little, strange little thing that, again, if you turn it like a diamond, there's places where you see the light reflect and places where it doesn't reflect. I mean, it has different facets to it because it's a geometric object. All right, but the net value is positive. It has more flat sides than it has pointy edges, or however you want to think about it. So the electron part is smaller than the proton part. So the overall effect is it's a net positive from a distance. Okay, so from a distance, it looks like a positive. And from, close up, it doesn't. But anyway, so that's just the nucleus. Because again, the real atom is going to have these electrons around it, right? And their theory is so crazy, is that this electron is flying around at 400,000 miles a second or something, and it's circling like a planet or something, and it has these specific orbits that really aren't speed dependent, in some sense, because they think the electron out here has more energy, when we know that the stuff on the outside moves slower than the stuff on the inside. So how could this have more energy than this? That part doesn't make any sense. But you can just see all these orbits and all these different speeds they'd have to stay in orbit. And the orbit is around a positive, just sort of like a gravity. It's a gravity model. And they're just using charge as apparently the reason why the electron is orbiting. And the much more sensible argument is that there's pressure between the electrons, and like magnets. So if I made this a south pole, and I made this a north pole, and this a north pole magnet, and this a north pole magnet, little flat magnets, and I had the south pole up in the middle, and I had little north pole ones out here, you can understand that I could arrange those magnets so that the pressure between the north poles, right, I could just create a geometry, all right, where I could arrange them like under pieces of glass where they stay in this configuration, where none of these north magnets fly into the south. So the north magnets don't move into the south pole because they're all creating pressure between each other. So the norths are repelling each other and they're attracted to the center. And the fact is they'll move as a whole unit. Like I could push on one and it'll change the pressure on all these others. And that fact is that it will create more pressure. So if I try to go in, I'll create more pressure with these other magnets, which is going to try to push me back out. So I have to use a certain amount of energy before I'm going to be able to push it in. I have to push in with more than just 1 pound of pressure or 1 unit of pressure. It's not going to be enough. I can poke on it, and I can poke on it, and I can poke on it, and we'll stay in this configuration because the power will be balanced. This one's still attracted, so it's not going to want to go out. It's going to stay where it is in terms of its proximity to the proton. So the pressure, it's a spring. And it's not going to let me, just with a little bit of impulse, make this electron fly into that nucleus that's positive. So they're going to be just in stuck arrangement. And then I could just say, well, if this only has 3 electrons, because of the geometry, then there's this little place where there's going to be an imbalance in the pressure, imbalance in the perfect alignment that the electrons would like to have with each other, and that's a candidate for allowing another electron in. So if you had another arrangement where the electrons were skewed to the nucleus, you could understand that this would look very positive to the rest of the world, and this would look very negative, this pointy edge, and that this would want to migrate to create the balance, to recreate this shape, to create an even balanced shape. And that's what the atoms are seeking. So the ones that are balanced don't combine with much unless there's something that's, missing the piece that they have. But that's the point is that there's no, the electrons aren't doing this, where they're flying around 2 atoms and doing this figure 8 crap. and that somehow that's sharing an electron, because the electron spends half its time in this atom and then the other half of its time in this atom. That's their theory. I mean, it's, you look at it and you say, that doesn't make any sense. How could the atoms stay together if the charge is way over here, the electron? Why would this atom stay here? I mean, it's getting bombarded by all kinds of crap in the universe. Why the hell would it stay here if the electron's way over here? It doesn't have any incentive. So it's not a very good binding agent. So yeah, the logical, the make sense argument is that, you can just figure out mathematically with the geometry and just say, obviously the electron is literally being shared. This one is using this one to create this arrangement of pressure between electrons, and this atom is using that same electron to do the same thing. So it's one less electron here when you combine two atoms. So the point would be, is obviously when you combine two atoms, you're in a sense giving away energy. Because if I was to take two atoms that weren't missing an electron, and I combine them, that is, I push two atoms that are complete, and I push them hard enough, the theory is what I'm doing is if one crashes into the other, one of the electrons is ejected and one of them is kept as the bonding electron. And so that's the energy I produce, okay, by doing this fusion. So this is what powers the sun, essentially, is you're taking two things that have, you know, a total of, say, 5 units, and you're converting it into something that has 4 units, and the extra unit is being released as bits of energy. So there's, so that fusion process creates the release of the amount of force that would be binding these electrons together if they weren't sharing this spot. Yeah, I don't know how else to say that, so I'll wait on that one. All right, well, I'll take a pause and erase. But, you know, to me, it's, you know, this makes infinitely more sense. It makes infinitely more sense to understand atoms as charge, as electrons and protons. And don't worry about giving them velocity until you have some reason to worry about giving them velocity. I mean, you could understand that the difference between, say, a hydrogen atom and a neutron, which are essentially the same thing, I mean, a proton and an electron, the only difference is this electron is maybe rotating, okay, when the neutron is outside of an atom. So when you kick this arrangement and you push an electron or a proton out, proton's likely to leave with its electron, and that when it leaves with its electron, it's perfectly reasonable that that little object, okay, with the heavy thing and the light thing, and I don't think it's smaller, but regardless, would now have a rotation. And so it would look neutral because it's a spinning magnet. I mean, if I spin a magnet, it's not going to look like a magnet anymore, because it's spinning fast enough, it's just going to be north-south, and it's just going to look like neither. It's not going to look like a north or a south, because it's constantly changing its polarity. So it's constantly pulling and pushing on an electron, and eventually the electron just says, fuck it. No point in obeying it, because it's happening so fast. The switch is happening so fast that the electron doesn't have to move, or the proton doesn't have to move. All right. Let's see. It's very frustrating because I really don't understand why any of you are so glued to these implausible explanations. And I have to go to the trouble to say, you know, they really don't have any evidence. You know, they've just made up a story that they like, and they're forcing it to fit, and they're just evading, in a lot of cases, doing the experiments that would show the truth. So it's like the kinetic energy formula, right? They don't have any evidence that it takes 4 times more fuel to go to accelerate something to twice the speed. They don't have any evidence that, you know, 10-ton trains going 5 miles an hour are 100%, okay, weaker, okay, than 5-ton trains going 10 miles an hour. You know, that there's twice as much energy. They don't have any evidence of any of this stuff. And this, like, again, the space argument proves all of that those kinematics to be nonsense, because, yeah, it's just about how much mass going what velocity you throw out of a spaceship, and that's going to decide how fast you go. It's just momentum. And in this case, there's nothing. They don't have a whole big pile of good experiments that say, gee, you have to believe in this stupid crap. There's nothing saying you have to believe that crap. And yet you just default to it because they, you know, draw some squiggly lines in an equation and say, see, it must be true. No, it must be true. I mean, do you really believe that the electron's in an orbit and it instantaneously, in no time at all, it just jumps to different places in the geometry, right? So, I mean, once you create this geometry, you know, you can put an electron. So once you have the proton, you put an electron here, you put an electron here. Well, in the next level, you put the electron here, right? So if you're going to have an orbital, like, you're going to have a distance from the proton. Well, yeah, you can only put so many in here without them being under intense pressure. And then obviously if you're going to put another electron, well, these electrons are repelling each other. So obviously the next spot would be here. And again, when you put that in three-dimensional geometry, you can get the idea that you start creating hexagons and octagons and whatnot, because the electrons' positions are going to be based on balancing the attractive force against the repulsive forces with the electron. So they have an attraction to the proton that never goes away. I mean, even if you're, you know, 10 miles from the proton, the nucleus, When the atom's in the right position, that is, when you're looking at it through, okay, not looking at one of the electrons in the way, it's still going to look positive. There's still going to be a force here saying, I'm attracted to it. And it's not until the damn thing gets pretty close that it says, wait a minute, there's way too many electrons here. I mean, it doesn't notice the electrons until it gets close enough to really see them. You know, the closer the electrons, they get to the electrons before they get to the proton. So you just understand that the intensity of the force is the inverse square law. So by the inverse square law, the electrons have the huge advantage of being closer to whatever object is approaching than the proton. So the force, the repulsion force against another electron is going to start showing up as it gets closer. This repulsive force is going to get more and more obvious. All right. Well, there's so much of it. I just lose all enthusiasm because I don't understand why you won't even concede it's possible they have the wrong model. It's not even possible. Alright, so I guess I could try to relate this to, you know, all the different phenomena. Okay, so what's heat, right? So when an atom's hot, what's really happening? Okay, so again, you have the small nucleus, and who knows? Okay, I mean, I'm not, you know, there's experiments who just say, well, electrons, it can't be what they say it is, okay? So their explanation is there's this little tiny electron. And, you know, if I have a molecule here, then this little tiny electron is spinning around this huge giant orbit around a grain of rice, you know, in a football field. The electron is way out in the stands doing this bizarre dance. And that somehow is forcing the atoms together. I mean, it's so silly. So what I would argue, right, is that this is just a magnetic, or you could say a charge model. A static charge model. Now, static doesn't mean much in this context because what's heat, right? Heat is just the idea that, okay, so you have this arrangement, okay, where this is the magic little element that's being shared between these two atoms, and neither one can get away from it until something else pops in here. I could pop another electron in and then break these two apart. But without popping something in here, they're not going to be easily broken apart. But what's really happening is that the environment is noisy. And so all of these things are in tension because they're constantly being vibrated. So they're all vibrating in their location. All right? And you could argue that the vibration is based on, you know, how much they can jiggle is based on how far away from the proton they are, right? How much tension they're in will decide how springy the rubber band is. So the further out they are, like the tighter, the closer they are, the smaller the vibration. The further out they are, the bigger the vibration. So, you know, the amount of jiggling. And the jiggling is happening in every direction, you could argue. All right, so they're pushing into the environment in all the kinds of directions. So at every one moment, it's one direction, but over time, it's every direction. So this is the other thing physics doesn't seem to appreciate, that we can't measure, you know, we can't look at the universe at the clock rate that the universe is running at. You know, no chance. The frame rate is, in, you know, is 10 to the 590th. I mean, it's a huge frame rate. There's a huge number of frames every second for the real universe. And so we see it after billions of frames, and we get this blurry image that looks like this, like, you know, everything, you know, all these images put together, when no, it's made of real motions. All right, so that gets into the whole Heisenberg bullshit, and then they start drawing these little blobs and saying, this is the way the electron somewhere in the blob. No, it's really somewhere, okay? There's no blob. All right, well, anyway. So the jiggling is energy, and we see it, okay? The infrared energy comes off of all objects that have a temperature, that is, that are hot. Any kind of temperature, it will produce some amount of this infrared energy, this photons. So it's constantly creating photons. Now, even though they argue, okay, that if it creates photons, it loses velocity, and therefore it has to crash into the nucleus and all this kind of crap. All right, because they think electrons, even though they know Maxwell is telling them electron is a negatively charged object, they've changed it into some sort of dipole or something. You know, somehow it's a little magnet, and it can do all kinds of things. It's not a charge. It's not a negative charge. It's not a negative object. It's not a negative, it's not a north monopole. No, it's some sort of dipole thing. Even though it can't be. It wouldn't work if it was. Anyway. And so as you cool something, what are you doing? You're just taking the jiggle out. You're taking out this motion that's creating infrared radiation at these frequencies. The combination of the jiggle at the high frequency and the jiggle at the lowest frequency of the particular atom. And that combination of frequencies ends up being a bunch of infrared light. Now you get into visible light when you add a little bit of extra energy. So you add a little bit of extra energy to an electron here, it's going to jiggle a little further and a little faster. So it's going to create a higher frequency. So it's going to take the infrared frequency that's already jiggling at, and it's going to add a little bit of speed to it, that is frequency to it. It's going to go back and forth even faster. And likewise, the further out you go, the more you do that. Except you're just adding less and less. And the same thing happens if you take energy away from it. That is, it hits into something cooler than it is. Some of the energy is pulled out of it and starts producing lower frequencies. So if you want to add higher frequency photons, you just add energy, set it on fire, put it in a fire, and you'll add energy to all the infrared energy. You know, you'll add more higher frequency to all of these tails of this frequency that it's already producing. So you're just adding energy by forcing a reflection. So I guess, you know, maybe a way of doing that, say if something was coming towards you and you hit it before you throw energy at it that essentially creates a new reflection. So now it reflects sooner than it would have. So it would have gone here, but you hit it sooner. So now it reflects here. That's sort of the idea, right? Is that you've shortened the distance this force is going. So if it's between two electrons, let's say, two electrons are balancing that force. Well, now you've increased the pressure between those electrons, and now the other electron is going to do the same thing. So the pressure that you're increasing the pressure, and by increasing the pressure, you're essentially shortening the distance between the electrons. You're essentially move the paddles closer, which forces the impacts to be more frequent. In a way, you're compressing the distance that the reflection happens in, which increases the rate of the vibration, because you've compressed the space that those things are operating in. So another way to look at it is okay, say if I had that arrangement of four electrons, that were balanced in an atom, the same distance from each other. And again, three dimensions makes this much more complicated. But anyway, so you can understand that, say, if these things are all the same distance from each other and they're jiggling, if I push one of them in, that's going to force all of these to do that same thing, where they're going to be moving in a direction and there's going to be more force to stop them from moving that direction. So they're going to end up jiggling in a shorter amount of space because you've compressed the amount of space they can move in. You've made the vessel they're vibrating in smaller, so their jiggle rate gets higher. The amount of times they move from one direction to the other direction is increasing. So, and it gets, the closer it is to the nucleus, the faster it can go, the further away, the slower. They say exactly the opposite. They say the thing out here is the high energy electron, when those are obviously the low energy electrons. It's not moving from here to here where you're releasing energy. It's moving from here to here where you're releasing energy. So they don't even have that right. All right. So when you make things colder, you can understand that the atoms get more and more rigid because they're not jiggling. So the atoms can't fly apart as easy. Everything's slowing down. There's less jiggle between them. So this whole, the fact that they're all tied together, they get tied even stronger and stronger because they're all of the rate of jiggle between all of the atoms is being dissipated and reduced. So they're moving less and less. So there's less opportunity for a little bit of energy to come in here and break one of them off. It becomes harder and harder and harder for them to fly off of each other because there's enough jiggling going on where this one jiggles this way and this one jiggles out this way, and those two jiggles mean that the atom breaks off. There's less chance of any of that the colder you make it, so it gets rigid and rigid and rigid. Now, how does their theory of this bonding the atoms together, how does this motion of the electron that's supposed to be connecting these two atoms, how does that make the bond stronger as it gets colder? Is the electron still going 400,000 miles an hour when it's freezing cold? I don't think so. I think that would be called a bunch of energy that you can't account for, how everything else stops jiggling and yet the electron just keeps going and going and going. No, not likely. All right. That's probably enough of a video, but I mean, they really have got everything wrong. They've perverted relativity into some sort of nonsense that time is a dimension when it doesn't fit in the three dimensions at all. It doesn't obey any of the rules. It's just a nonsense. Time isn't a place. I mean, entanglement. What? some sort of ESP between the subatomic particles. There's no evidence we have it. There's certainly no evidence they have it, and there's certainly no evidence that if this stupid entanglement crap existed, you don't think evolution would have taken advantage of it by now? Come on. All of this wave-particle duality, the kinetic energy nonsense, it's all just terrible storytelling. It's not even close to our real story of this real universe. It's just such a pile of crap. Fantastic bullshit. And I just can't understand how anyone who's literate, you know, can understand, you know, not walking into traffic, can understand, don't drink the water if it's all brown and full of squiggly shit. I mean, I don't know how people have any common sense can buy this crappy, silly, bizarre story when they show you nothing. And then I've demonstrated to you when they do show you something like the two slit experiment, they don't even show you the real fucking experiment. They show you a pile of crap. They tell you complete lies that, oh, look, two waves come out and create the pattern. Oh, no, well, they don't create that pattern. You know, they create a pattern. It looks a little bit like it. I mean, it has on and off things in it. But, yeah, it's a completely different word. You know, it's not the same code. It's not the same arrangement at all. Why would you accept that? You know, I mean, they give you a shirt that's a small, you know, and you're obviously an extra large. And it's like, what the hell? I mean, that's not the right. You can't say this is that when it's not the same thing. Elephants aren't hippopotamuses. Come on. Yeah, they've got little tiny things and similar, but they're not the same animal. You can figure it out. Whatever. Yeah, just, it is getting to look just like, yeah, there's no point in attempting intelligent conversation with a planet full of fucking goddamn sheeple morons. So just keep licking up the science puke, because that's all it is. I mean, it's just gross. It's gummy bear candy. It's just, they're serving you crap. Superficial, synthetic. Oh, we'll go into a wormhole and pop out in a new dimension. You know, where you're not short and fat. I mean, it's just such, it's such childish daydreaming nonsense. Not connected to anything real, or sensible, or reasonable, or logical. God, I hate this planet. Alright, so that's enough of a video. Fuck. Very discouraging. Alright, till the next time and such, when I'll endeavor to persevere. But that's all it's going to be, so I'll just persevere. You know, there won't be anything else to the story. Well, he made a nice effort at persevering, but yeah, it was futile. Because it's not a reasonable planet. Not a planet of populated by reasonable organisms. Nobody could speak intelligent. They all missed the intelligent boat.